I'm going to read an introduction to this. Maybe I should have had you turn to James first, in James chapter number 5. Would you turn there and I'll wait on you. Fifth chapter of James, verses 10 and 11. James 5, verse 10. Take my brethren, the prophets, who have spoken in the name of the Lord, for an example of suffering affliction and of patience. Behold, we count them happy which endure. You have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. With that in mind, we ask you now to turn to the book of Job, and I'm going to preach from this book. As I told our Sunday school class, this book is devoted primarily to one man and his friends. 42 chapters in the Bible. Just some comments to look for as we get into the message. First of all, I want to point out the confusion of Job in his suffering. Why was he confused? That'll help you if you understand. Job had a lot of problems. We've never known anything like it. Never will know anything like it, probably. But why was he so confused by all these things that came into his life? That's pretty common with us. I want you to note also his confidence in the face of all these things. He was still confident. We'll show several passages that point that out. And then his consistency in the face of all the things that he had to face. Ron read this morning in devotion, no man can serve two masters. I believe Job served one master. It's pretty evident in his life in that book that was written concerning his life. He's very consistent in the way that he faced problems. Then we'll look at his consolation. He did have consolation for all that he suffered. Last of all, and we'll try to use this in the end, the contribution that it makes to our lives. How does it help us to know about this man? What can we learn from it? Can we indeed practice the things that he teaches in this book? And I hope we can. In chapter 1, I want you to note the testimony of God concerning this man. Now, you know, people can brag on you and say a lot of nice things about you, but my friend, when God commends you, you're commended. In verse 1, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. That man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed or avoided evil. What a commendation from God himself. He was born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. He had a good family, a nice family, 10 children. His substance also was 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of asses. No, that's not right. 500 yoke of oxen and 500 yoke of she asses, and a very great household. So that this man was the greatest of all the men of the East. Man of note. Man of reputation. Then, as we read further, and I'm going to read all this, he was perfect, he was upright, he feared God. And I have to say this is God's testimony, because when Job was faced with suffering, God challenged Satan and said this about Job. These very things we just read. Have you considered my servant Job? He's a perfect man, he's an upright man. He fears God and he eschews evil. And when God says that about you, beloved, that's something to be thankful for. But as we continue, a nice family meant much substance. He had everything a man could desire, I suppose. But he also was an intercessor for his children. How many of us as parents do not intercede from time to time to our children or for our children, our grandchildren? We know they're just flesh. We know how powerful Satan is and how he can ensnare them and cause them to fall. So Job was aware of that, and he prayed for his children constantly. Enter the enemy of man. You find this in verse number 6. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. Satan means adversary. He's an adversary. Peter will read this later. Peter says, your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. He's an adversary. He's against us. He was against Job. But God says in verse 7, the Lord said unto Satan, whence comest thou? Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro in the earth and from walking up and down in it. He has access to the peoples, to the regions of this world. And the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? You see his testimony concerning Job. God recognized this man for what he was. And he asked Satan, have you looked at him? Have you considered him? Verse 9, then Satan answered the Lord and said, doth Job fear God for naught? Don't you know why he's afraid of you? Hast thou not made a hedge about him? Oh, listen, what this ought to mean to us. Hast thou not made a hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. Why was Job one of the greatest men of the East? Why did he have a good family? Why did he have material things? Really, why was a man who was perfect and upright and eschewed evil? Because of his God. He built a hedge around him. You need to listen to this. Every one of us need to listen to this. God can hedge us about. He did Job. But notice the challenge of Satan in verse 11. But put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath. He'll curse thee to thy face. Take away every substance that he has, including his children, and he'll curse you to your face. That was the challenge of Satan. And the Lord said unto Satan, verse 12, behold, all that he hath is in thy power. Only thy upon himself put not forth thine hand. So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. You cannot touch his body. You cannot touch him in any way. You can have everything he has, but don't touch him. We learn an awful lot about God in this first chapter of Job that we need to apply to our life. He controls everything about us. He can keep Satan and everybody else in the world from harming us. He has that power. And then from that verse 13 all the way through verse 19, we see the destruction of everything that Job had. All his material things, his family was killed in one swoop, all 10 of them. And then we see Job's reaction in verse 20. And then Job arose, rent his mantle, shaved his head, fell down upon the ground, and worshiped. No man can serve two masters. And said, naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Who did Job credit with everything that he had? Was it by his hard work? By how wise he was? By how he controlled his money? Who did he credit for everything that he had? The Lord hath given and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Let these things sink down in your heart. We need to know this. Verse 22 says, in all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. How many times do we charge God foolishly? Because we don't have the attitude that Job had. We don't have the knowledge that Job had. We don't understand the ways of God as Job did. Chapter 2 tells us of the suffering of Job. I'm sorry, chapter 2 tells us another temptation. Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said unto Satan, from whence comest thou? Verse 3, and the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job? That there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil, and still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou hast moved me against him to destroy him without cause. Without cause. You move me to do this, and I'll let you do it. There's no cause for this. Satan answered the Lord and said, skin for skin. Yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. He goes a step further. But put forth thine hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face. Same challenge. He'll curse you. And the Lord said unto Satan, behold, he's in thine hand, but save his life. He could not kill Job. Remember that. He can make him as miserable as a human being had ever been. But he could not take his life because God controls life and God limited him at what he could do. You cannot have his life, but you can make him miserable. Verse 7, so went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown. All of his flesh, all of his body, from the top of his head to the soles of his feet were covered with boils, running boils, as you read further, exuding pus and corruption. Verse 8 says, he took a potsherd to scrape himself withal, and he sat down among the ashes. Then said his wife unto him, dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. She's aiding Satan to get him to curse God, his own wife. Curse God and die. But he said unto her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? And all this did not Job sin with his lips. I don't think there could be a more miserable man on the face of the earth than this man Job at this time. You know Satan would go to the extreme as much as he could to make Job hurt. He couldn't kill him. So he just made him as miserable as a human being could be and still be alive. What was Job's reaction? Shall we receive good at the hand of the Lord and not receive the evil? Do you ever think like that? When we have trouble, do we ever think like that? It could be worse. God's been so good to me. How can I ever complain about what few things he's done against me? And then from that point on, we're going to be going back and forth. I'm not going to read all this. But enter Job's friends as Satan came on the scene and challenged God twice concerning this man Job. Job's friends, and I would put a big question mark beside that because Job certainly did. Job's friends now come to comfort him in his mourning and in his terrible suffering. beginning in this verse 11, Job's three friends heard of all this evil that was come upon him. They came every one from his own place. Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, Zophar the Naamathite, for they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. And when they lifted up their eyes afar off and knew him not, they lifted up their voice and wept, and they rent every one his mantle and sprinkled dust upon their heads toward heaven. So they sat down with him on the ground 7 days and 7 nights, and none spake a word unto him, for they saw that his grief was very great. Back to my points I want you to see. From this point on in chapter number 3, you're going to see the confusion of Job. We should be familiar with that. One of the first things we ask when things happen, why? Why are these happening to me? And Job was a man. He was flesh and blood just like us. He lost 10 children. And all the substance. He lost the praise and the honor of all of his friends. They walked away from him now. If you read the book of Job, you'll see how much he was respected and honored before, but now he's lost all of that. And he begins to question, why? What have I done? His response to the temptation of Job was something that we should consider in our hearts. Shall I receive the good at the hand of the Lord and not receive the evil? Who are we that we think that we should go through life without any trouble, without any temptation, without any pain, any suffering, any sickness? Job knew who he was. As we think about this, Job's testimony is in chapter 3, verse 25. Notice this. For the thing which I greatly feared has come upon me. Job had thought about this before, and we do too. Sometimes we think about some things that could happen, and we know we shake, we shiver, and we say, oh my. But Job says, the thing which I greatly feared has come upon me, and that which I was afraid of is come unto me. I was not in safety, neither had I rest, neither was I quiet, yet trouble came. He goes on to say later in this book, a man that is born of woman is full of trouble as the sparks fly upward. It's just a part of life. And he knew that. That doesn't comfort very much when you're hurting like he was. There's a lot of confusion. From this point on, there's a back and forth conversation between Job and his friends. And it's not conducive to helping Job. Chapter 5, verse 17. Just looking ahead a little. Behold, happy is the man whom God correcteth. Therefore despise not thou the chastening of the Almighty. This is one of Job's friends. He's already concluded that God is chastening him, and yet God has said to Satan, you tempted me to do this, let you do this without a cause. There was no cause. Job wasn't guilty of anything. And yet his comforting is, happy is the man whom the Lord chasteneth. So beloved, as we consider this man, we look at Job's answer in chapter 6. Job answered and said, oh, that my grief were thoroughly weighed, and my calamity laid in the balances together, for now it would be heavier than the sand of the sea. Therefore my words are swallowed up, for the arrows of the Almighty are within me. The poison whereof drinketh up my spirit, the terrors of God do set themselves in array against me. I feared this, and it happened. The heirs of the Almighty are within me. He's confused. Why is this happening? See, he doesn't have the advantage of knowing that God had said to Satan, "You've asked me to do this without a cause." He's not guilty of anything. But you can just imagine how he must begin to reason. What have I done? The terrors of God do set themselves in array against me. Notice his cry in verse 23, same chapter 6. "Deliver me from my enemy's hands, or redeem me from the hand of the mighty. Teach me, and I'll hold my tongue. Cause me to understand where I've erred." What have I done wrong? Moving on, chapter number 8, verse 14. Again, this is a conversation back and forth between these three men and Job. Chapter 8, verse 14. I'm sorry, verse 4, I gave you the wrong verse. "If thy children have sinned," again, this is one of Job's friends, "if thy children have sinned against him, and he have cast them away for their transgressions, if thou wouldest seek unto God betimes and make thy supplication to the Almighty, if thou wert pure and upright, surely now he would awake for thee and make the habitation of the righteousness prosperous." You know what he's saying? Your kids were wicked. Your children were. They deserve everything they got. Job is grieving and mourning over the loss of 7 sons and 3 daughters. And the most comfort this man can give me, if you just do what was right, if your children hadn't been so wicked, God wouldn't have cut them off. Notice, if you would, Job's answer in chapter 9, verse 2. "I know it is so of a truth, but how should a man be just with God? If he will contend with him, he cannot answer him 1 of 1,000. We're talking about God, he's saying. "He is wise in heart and mighty in strength, and who hath hardened himself against him and hath prospered." So Job's response, verse number 12, "Behold, he taketh away, who can hinder him? Who will say unto him, what doest thou?" The same thoughts we have. What is God doing? But Job says we can't do that. Chapter 9, verse 4. "He's wise in heart and mighty in strength, and who hath hardened himself against him and hath prospered." Verse 12, we just read that. Verse 30, same chapter 9. "If I wash myself with snow water and make my hands never so clean, yet shalt thou plunge me in the ditch, and mine own clothes shall pour me." Job was not a self-righteous. He was not a self-made man. He knew where his righteousness come from. It came from the Lord. He didn't contend that he was a holy person. Notice in chapter 10, verse number 2. "I will say unto God, do not condemn me. Show me wherefore thou contendest with me." You see the confusion that he has in his life. Do you ever experience that? Do you ever wonder what happens when things come into your life and they seem so unreal and so hard to deal with? Well, Job experienced that too. In the 30th verse, no, that's not the right verse. In the 12th verse of chapter 10, "Thou hast granted me life and favor. The habitation hath preserved my spirit." He recognized God for who he is. He is he's his Savior. He's the one to sustain him. He gives him life. He sustains him every day. God help us to learn from Job. Chapter 12. Here's another comforter. A man named Zophar. Verses 9 and 10. "Who knoweth not in all these things, in all these that the hand of the Lord hath wrought this? In whose hand is the soul of every living thing and the breath of all mankind?" Job's answer to Zophar. This may be of God. We don't know. But notice his consistency. Even though he's confused and he doesn't understand why all these things are happening to him, he's still honoring God in everything he says. He's giving God the glory. He's not questioning God. Looking further on, chapter 13, verse 4. But you are forgers of lies, you are all physicians of no value. The doctor doesn't help you at all. He said, you're not helping me with all these comforting things you think you're saying. All the times you're calling me a hypocrite, you say my children were just wicked sinners and God destroyed them. He knew that wasn't true. Let's move on to chapter 15. I'm only trying to hit the highlights because it would take forever to preach through this book verse by verse. I don't want to do that this morning. I just want to show you some of the things that I believe are important to us. Chapter 15, beginning in verse 6. Thine own mouth condemneth thee, and not I. Now this is one of his friends, Eliphaz. Thine own mouth condemneth thee, and not I. Yea, thine own lips testify against thee. Art thou the first man that was born, or wast thou made before the hills? Hast thou heard the secret of God, and dost thou restrain wisdom to thyself? Restrain wisdom to thyself. What knowest thou that we know not? What understandest thou which is not in us? With us are both the gray-headed and the very aged men, much elder than thy father. Are the consolation of God small with thee? Is there any secret thing with thee? So his friends are accusing him. Verse 14, what is man that thou should be clean, and he which is born of a woman, that he should be righteous? Job was described by God to be a righteous man, an upright man, and they're questioning it. Chapter 16, Job becomes a prophet. I love this portion of the 16th chapter. Read this with me, beginning in verse number 6. For though I speak, my grief is not assuaged. Though I forbear, what am I eased? And things aren't getting better. But now he hath made me weary. Thou hast made desolate all my company. Thou hast filled me with wrinkles, which is a witness against me. My leanness rising up in me beareth witness to my face. He teareth me in his wrath. Look at this. He teareth me in his wrath, who hateth me. He gnasheth upon me with his teeth. Mine enemy sharpeneth his eyes upon me. They've gaped upon me with their mouth. You ever read the gospel messages? What is ascribed to the enemies of the Lord Jesus Christ is written by Job here long before it happened. They have gaped upon me with their mouth. They've smitten me upon the cheek reproachfully. They've gathered themselves together against me. That's a cross. God has delivered me to the ungodly and turned me over into the hands of the wicked. That's a cross. This is prophecy. I was at ease, but he hath broken me asunder. He hath also taken me by my neck and shaketh me to pieces and set me up for his mark. Verse 20, my friends scorn me, but mine eye poureth out tears unto God. This is a picture of Christ at Calvary. Moving on now, chapter 19. This is one of the powerful chapters in the book of Job. Verse 1 of chapter 19. Then Job answered and said, how long will you vex my soul and break me in pieces with words? These 10 times have you reproached me. You're not ashamed that you make yourself strange to me. Be it indeed that I have erred, mine error remaineth with myself. If indeed you will magnify your sakes against me, yourselves against me, and plead against me my reproach, know now that God hath overthrown me and hath compassed me with his net. This is of the Lord. Behold, I cry out of wrong, but I'm not heard. I cry aloud, but there is no judgment. He hath fenced up my way, and I cannot pass. He hath set darkness in my path. He hath stripped me of my glory and laid the crown from my head. Speaking of Christ. Verse 11. hath also kindled his wrath against me, and he counted me unto him as one of his enemies. Is that not what happened at Calvary when God punished his own son for our sins? Verse 13, he hath put my brethren far from me, and mine acquaintance are verily estranged from me. They all fled when Christ was captured. My kinfolk have failed. My familiar friends have forgotten me. Notice verse 19. All my inward friends abhorred me. They whom I loved are turned against me. Is that a description of what happened at Calvary? It's not a description of what happened to Job when his very wife said, curse God and die. My bone cleaveth to my skin and to my flesh, and I am escaped with the skin of my teeth. Have pity upon me, have pity upon me, O ye my friends, for the hand of God hath touched me. Can you think like this? Why was this written? This is one of the oldest books in the Bible, I do believe. Written before the days of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. The hand of God hath touched me. Verse 23, oh, that my words were written. Oh, that they were printed in a book. Job's desire for that was fulfilled. We're reading it right now. That they were graven with an iron pen and laid in the rock forever. For I know that my Redeemer liveth and that he shall stand in the latter day upon the earth. Job knew the Lord. He knew his Redeemer. As I said in the beginning, consider these things as we read this book. His consistency. No matter what happened, even though his friends turned against him, called him the worst kind of hypocrite, he was still consistent. He knew who was doing this. Notice these next few verses. Verse 26, and though after my skin worms destroy this body, when I'm dead and laying in my casket and the skin worms are chewing my body up, yet in my flesh I shall see God, or shall I see God? See his consistency? As things got worse, his faith did not fail. He was so patient. He was so constant in what he believed and what he determined to do. Whom I shall see for myself, and mine eyes shall behold, and not another, though my reins be consumed within me. I will see the Lord. Is that not what we believe? This man gave a great testimony. Let's go to chapter 23 now. I know I'm going fast, but again, I can't preach this verse by verse. Chapter 23, verse 10. But he knoweth the way that I take. These are the words of Job. He knows the way I take. When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. We sing that song. Rejoice in the Lord. He makes no mistake. He knoweth the path that I take. I shall come forth as gold when I'm tried. The words of Job were used in that song. Verse 11, my foot hath held his steps. His way have I kept and not declined. See how constant he was, how patient he was in all of the suffering and all the revilings of his friends and the charges of being a hypocrite. Neither have I gone back from the commandment of his lips. I've esteemed the words of his mouth more than my necessary food. But he's of one mind, and who can turn him? And what his soul desireth, even that he doeth. Now look at verse 14. For he performeth the thing that is appointed for me. Selah. He performeth the thing that is appointed for me. And many such things are with him. Therefore am I troubled at his presence when I consider I'm afraid of him. For God maketh my heart soft, and the Almighty troubleth me. Because I was not cut off before the darkness, neither hath he covered the darkness from my face. Job honored God in every way, in spite of his increase in suffering. In spite of all that was said against him, in spite of all he went through, he was constant. He was confused. But he was consistent in the sense that he was going to serve God. He knew what was happening to him, not fully, but he knew who the author of it was. And I can't even ask him what he's doing. A couple more verses and we'll close. Let's go to chapter 38, verses 1 through 6. Here's God's reply to Job. Now his friends have been talking to him. They've been asking him all these questions. But after it's all said and done, verse 1, Job 38, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this that darkeneth counsel by words without knowledge? You don't know what you're talking about, more or less. Gird up now thy loins like a man, and I will demand of thee, answer thou me. Where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Where were you, Job, when I laid the foundations of the earth? If thou hast understanding, declare. Who hath laid the measures thereof? If thou knowest, or who hath stretched the line upon it? God begins to ask Job questions, and of course he has no answer. Chapter 40, verses 1 through 9. Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, shall he that contendeth with the Almighty instruct him? He that reproveth God, let him answer it. Then Job answered the Lord and said, now this is the attitude of Job I want you to see. I want you to see his contrition. Behold, I'm vile. What shall I answer thee? I will lay my hand upon my mouth. Once have I spoken, but I will not answer. Yea, twice, but I will proceed no further. Then answered the Lord unto Job out of the whirlwind and said, gird up thy loins now like a man. I'll demand of thee and declare thou unto me. God asked Job some questions. He didn't have a clue what was going on. He goes further in chapter 42. And we see the consolation of Job for all that he's suffered. Chapter 42, verse 1, then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that thou canst do everything, that no thought can be withholden, no thought can be withholden from thee. Who is he that hideth counsel without knowledge? Therefore have I uttered that I understood not. Things too wonderful for me, which I knew not. Here I beseech thee, and I will speak, I will demand of thee, and declare thou unto me, I've heard of thee by the hearing of the ear, but now mine eye seeth thee. He's not talking about his physical eyes, he's talking about his eye of understanding. He understands God because God has just declared some wonderful things to him. Verse 6 says, wherefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. With all that he suffered, with all that he went through, all the railings against him. When God asks some questions, he is very repentant. I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. It was so after the Lord had spoken these words unto Job, the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, my wrath is kindled against thee and against thy two friends, for ye have not spoken to me the thing that is right, as my servant Job hath. That's God's testimony. That's not Job's testimony. This is God's summation of what happened. Therefore, take unto you 7 bullocks and 7 rams. They had to make an offering to the Lord because they sinned against God in their accusations of this man. Notice further, verse 10, the Lord turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friends. Also, the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. He's one of the greatest men of the East, and now he's double the greatest man of the East. God gives him back 10 children, all that he lost. Now, in summarizing, what was his contribution to us? We have the book of Job. Most people won't even read it because it says it's too confusing. I don't understand it. It's not all that confusing. It's humbling. It's reality. It's practical. It's meaningful. God's testimony was that he was a perfect and an upright man. What does he say about me? What does he say about you? God's testimony is important, beloved. What God thinks of us is important. We read the book of Job and we know why God felt that way about him, because God knew him. He knew he would stand the trial of Satan. Both times when he was challenged by Satan, he knew that Job would stand it and come through like gold. He feared God and he put away evil from himself. All of his substance was returned to him, double. He was an intercessor. He was a man that loved his family and interceded for them. When we think about Job, I want you to remember this. This was all for our benefit. The Bible tells us in 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, all these things happened unto them for our ensamples. We didn't know about Job because we're going to have trouble. We're going to have trouble. That's part of life. How are we going to deal with it? Are we going to be consistent like Job? Are we going to be confident? Are we going to understand that the Lord is doing this? Therefore, I don't need to break under it. I need to continue. I need to be patient. That's what we read to you, beginning of the message. You've heard the patience of Job, James says. Well, you've heard of it now. I hope it helps us in our Christian walk and the things we have to deal with. Sometimes they hurt really bad. Sometimes they're confusing. And it attacks our faith and causes us to doubt. But remember Job. Remember Job. He had a lot of knowledge, and that knowledge sustained him in time of trouble. Why are we here today? Why do I stand in this pulpit, service after service? I want you to know. I want you to know God. I want you to know his ways. I want you to know how he thinks and what he can do for you. And if you get that in your heart and mind, you're still going to have trouble. Don't misunderstand me. This preaching today about all wealth and health and happiness is a lie. It's not scriptural. Because the Bible teaches exactly the opposite. Life is full of trouble as the sparks fly upward, Job says. But how do we deal with it? When he hath tried me, I shall come forth as gold. That was Job's testimony. What about yours? What about mine? We've got a life to live. I've sung that song this morning. I love that song. For the words, there'll be new grace when it's my time to go. But I'm not there yet. In the meantime, I need to be patient. You need to be patient. You need to continue to serve the Lord until he comes. That's our message. So, Tim, you come and lead us in invitation.